All right, kiddos, you guys are dismissed to go upstairs. We cut the kids' story today because we were anticipating with our missions story and our mission trip report, you guys to get that instead of a story today. So, kiddos, you guys are dismissed to go upstairs. The rest of you, if you'll take your Bibles and open them to the book of Luke. Book of Luke, we're headed to Luke chapter 19 today to look at one of the most famous stories in all of Scripture. If you grew up in church, then you probably know the song that goes along with this. So I thought we'd all just go ahead and stand right back up and sing it. You know, Zacchaeus, what? And I'm kidding. We're not going to sing the song today. Although we could. It's a fun song. It's a good song. So welcome. If you're a guest with us this morning, I just want to say glad you're here. We're glad you joined us today. We finished up last week our series on the book of Daniel. Daniel was a fun one. In church, I'm going to be honest with you. I am thankful to be done with the book of Daniel. It was challenging for me, and I am excited about what we're going to do over the next 3 weeks. I was mentioned earlier, we are in the process of catching up with Jesus as he is headed to the cross. This week, we're looking at Luke 19, first 10 verses. We're going to study Jesus and Zacchaeus. The next Sunday is Palm Sunday and the triumphal entry. And then, obviously, the following week will be Easter Sunday. We will have a Good Friday service as well. So I want to invite you to all of those things. And as I said this last week, I want to reiterate it to you. If you are something like me, you tend to walk up to Christmas and Easter and go, oh yeah, here we are, back to the Christmas story, back to the Easter story. And I was listening to a podcast this week by a really, really old preacher. He died a long time ago, and he was just talking about preaching special sermons. And he said, you should always take advantages of these special moments to renew our interest and renew our minds and renew our hearts for what Jesus came and did. And so that's what the goal is for us over the next few weeks. I don't want Easter, I don't want the celebration of the cross and the resurrection to be some dull, cliched, predictable tradition. I want this to renew and reawaken our hearts and our minds. So in order to do that, what we're going to do is we're going to work to prepare ourselves. We are going to make a concentrated effort to be ready for what Easter Sunday is, and we're doing that today through Luke 19, okay? So hopefully by now you are there. I want to read the first 10 verses of this, and then I will pray and we'll jump into it, okay? So Luke chapter 19, picking up in verse 1. He entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and he climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they, the crowd, saw it, they all grumbled. He's gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today, salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. This is God's word. Thanks be to God. Let's go to him in prayer now. God, I'm thankful for these 10 verses and what they have done to me and in my heart and mind this week. God, I ask that you would take your word now and that you would awaken dead hearts. God, I pray that you would renew dry hearts. I pray that you would mend broken hearts through your word. Spirit of the living God, would you take this and transform us to be people who look like you, who walk like you, and who talk like you? God, would you convict us to where we have been wrong and sinful, and by the power of your Spirit, would you give us the courage to repent and obey? Jesus, would you increase and may we decrease today? Would you be honored and glorified? I ask this in your Son's name. Amen. So, last week, we wrapped up Daniel. And remember, the end of Daniel, we covered all this strange prophecy, and there was one guy in history that we talked about a whole lot, and it was Alexander the Great. You guys remember Alexander the Great? Alexander the Great was this fantastic, really smart, really wise, really effective Grecian king that quickly and effectively dominated the known world at that time. He had everything he wanted, right? He had power, He had position, he had authority, he had a legacy, he had money. There was quite literally nothing that was not at his disposal. Yet despite all of that, Alexander the Great is famous for saying, there are no more worlds to conquer. He's made it. He's made it this far. Yet at the end of all of this, he goes, I'm just still not satisfied. I've done it all. I've built kingdoms. I've built legacy. I own the world. Yet there's nothing left. And I think we find Zacchaeus in a similar state today. And maybe, just maybe, we find you in a similar state today. In fact, I think that I could argue that your very presence here this morning declares that your heart is not satisfied and that you're looking for something else, right? Maybe like Zacchaeus or Alexander the Great, you have made it by the world standards, right? You've got money, you've got financial success, you've got business, you've got it all, but you don't. Maybe some of you walked in this morning and you're struggling and thinking that if I just had this thing, then my heart would be satisfied. Maybe some of you in the room have tasted the Lord's goodness and you just desire more of it. And I think that there are three points this morning from this passage that point us towards the one source that can fulfill the longing of your heart. I don't have one big main point. I have three points today of application. And here's the first one. The first thing that this passage calls us to do today is this: climb up a tree. Climb up a tree. Now, I want to give credit where credit's due. I built my outline for my sermon, and I had it all worked out, and then I went and I listened to Tim Keller's sermon on this, which is really good, and I'll send it to you. It's better than my sermon, but his point was climb up a tree, and so I was like, man, his wording's just way better than mine, so I'm going to steal it. Now, I didn't steal the content of his message. I just stole the phrase of the first point. So climb up a tree. What do I mean? What does Keller mean when we say climb up a tree? Well, our buddy here, little old Zacchaeus, right? What do we know? What do we know about Big Z? Not only was he a tax collector, he was a chief tax collector. In other words, he was in charge of all the tax collectors in Jericho. And what do we know about Jericho? Jericho was the ancient New York City, right? It was a clash of cultures. It was a business epicenter in the world. There was transactions. There was tons of money that he would have had access to. And as the chief tax collector, he would have worked or manipulated or paid his way off to the top of all the tax collectors in that city. Now, how did Jewish people feel about tax collectors, and why did they feel this way? And if you've been at church, you know that they were hated, but why? So Rome comes in, they conquer Israel, they're in charge of all of it, and they're going, they know in order to fund their government and make things roll, what do they got to do? They got to tax them. So why not just send a Roman ruler in there, or a Roman general, to start taxing people? Well, if all of a sudden somebody from Kenya walked into Dalhart and said, I'm going to tax you guys, we would know where to hide the money. Right? They're an outsider. They wouldn't be able to know where we hid it from them. So what does Rome do? They say, you know what? Here's what we'll do. We'll hire an insider, one of you guys, and what we'll tell you is, this is what we expect as payment from your people. Now, whatever you get a bit above and beyond that, that's all yours to keep. So what happens as an Israelite who has a desire to make money, as a desire to have a legacy and a business and to have influence and position in their community? I'm going to take on this job. And yeah, Rome may want 30%. I'll just take an extra 20% off the top and keep it for myself. No work. And Rome would then stand behind them and support them. So anyone who became a tax collector wasn't just a betrayer of the Israelites. They were loyal to Rome. In other words, these people were hated, they were despised, they were rejected, and they were ostracized. So here we have Zacchaeus, the chief of all the tax collectors, and he catches wind that in comes Jesus, passing through town. Now, if you go back to chapter 18, verses 35 through 43, you see that Jesus is on the edge of Jericho and he's just healed a blind man. And Zacchaeus catches word of this and he's like, huh, Zacchaeus is passing through. And by this point in Jesus's ministry, his popularity would have grown so much that he would have always had a crowd along him. But it's interesting to me that when Zacchaeus hears of Jesus's coming, Zacchaeus goes, I've got to know who this guy is, right? So if Taylor Swift was coming to Dalhart, there are some of you in this room that would fawn and faint to get to a place where you could see her, right? Some of you would be like, I ain't interested at all. If Donald Trump was coming, those of you who aren't interested in Taylor Swift are interested in Donald Trump. So you're going to go and see him coming through town, right? So pick your famous person. Somebody is going to want to be close to them. But Zacchaeus, when he hears Jesus coming, I find it interesting that Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus because Zacchaeus had it all. He had wealth. He had influence. He had position. He had everything that our culture tells you to pursue, yet all of that didn't satisfy him. So what does he do? He goes, man, I've got to see Jesus, but there's a problem. There's a problem. What's our problem? Zacchaeus was a wee little man. It's a direct translation from the Greek, I'm pretty sure. A wee little man was he. He was vertically challenged, right? He couldn't get to where he could see over everybody and go, man, I want to see who this guy is. I can't do it. But that wasn't the main problem. His vertical height was not his biggest issue. You know what his biggest issue was? There was a crowd. There is a crowd who goes, there is no way we're going to let that guy get close to him. Man, they would have seen Zacchaeus and they would have hated him. They would have thought, you know what? I'm going to do Jesus a favor by preventing this manipulative traitor from getting anywhere close to him. In their self-righteous, moralistic superiority, they prevented Zacchaeus from drawing near to Jesus. And church, I think there is a really strong warning in this for us today. I don't think this is true of us, and I hope it's not, but church, may we not be a people who prevent others from drawing near to Jesus by our self-righteous, moralistic superiority. Satan would love for nothing more than for us to be formed into a bunch of holier-than-thou people that prevents others from seeing Jesus. In fact, isn't this one of the biggest complaints about Christianity? Right? Man, I love your Jesus, but I don't love your people. Because they don't live like him or act like him or look like him. Self-righteous moralistic superiority isn't attractive to Jesus or others. It just prevents them from seeing Jesus just like the crowd did to Zacchaeus. Church, I think that I failed at this the most when I was a kid. So kiddos, listen up for just a second. I remember when I was in high school, I kind of had an attitude, which I don't think I went to high school with anybody in here. I kind of had this, Johnny, you were with me or close to me, right? So I kind of had this attitude that I was, you know, I wanted to be the good boy who always did the right thing. And I would kind of hold those who weren't, you know, they weren't good boys at arm's length. I kind of had this like set of judgment going, I don't want to draw near to you because I'm afraid a little bit of your dirt might get on me and it might stick. Kids, don't be that way. Kids, don't be that way. Love people the way that Jesus did. The crowd prevents Zacchaeus from drawing close to Jesus, but that doesn't stop Zacchaeus, does it? Instead, what does he do? He runs on ahead, knowing the path that Jesus would take, and he finds a sycamore tree and climbs up on it. Now, here we have this man of position and influence in his community climbing up on a tree. And in Zacchaeus's and in Jesus's culture, this would have been an absolutely humiliating act. This isn't something that socially dignified people do. As a matter of fact, there's actually some risk that as he climbs a tree with a dress he's wearing, he would have been exposed. So he was willing to risk all of that. But that's what it takes to see Jesus, isn't it? You see, Jesus doesn't draw near to those who've got it all put together. Jesus doesn't break bread with the holy huddle. Look throughout the Gospels, and what is Jesus's reaction towards the religious elite, towards the self-righteous, moralistic people? How does he treat them? He rebukes them. He calls them out. Why? Because God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. In order to see Jesus, Zacchaeus had to humble himself before his entire community. He had to humble himself before God. And you know who else he had to humble himself before? Before himself. How did he do it? He climbed up a tree. Now, who climbs up trees? Right, so stick around after church. Yeah, I see this guy climbs up trees, right? Stick around after church and watch those trees out front and who climbs up it. I have been coming to this church for 8 or 9 years and I have yet to see Gary Frost or Danny up in the trees. I don't know what we're waiting on, guys, come on. No, it's not them, it's kids. And usually it's my kids that are stuck up in the trees, right? And I'll take ownership of it, they get it from their dad. I remember when I was a kid, I loved to climb trees. I love to do it. Now, why? Anybody else a tree climber when they were kiddos? Come on, climb up that tree. There we go. Yeah, I see some proud hands. There we go. Why do we climb trees? Why do we do it? Why do we climb trees? Because it's fun. It's an adventure. It's a rush of adrenaline, right? You kind of get a sense of a pride of accomplishment. Look how I did it. And I remember as a kid, I would lay there and I would look at the trees and I'd be like, I can make it to the top. I've got it. I like the little twigs, I can make it that high. I can do it. And so, you know, I would jump up there and I would climb up the tree and then I would get stuck usually. Now, why do we do this? Why, we do it because we want to see, we want to have this sense of invincibility, but ultimately, why do we climb trees? It's because it inspires in us a sense of awe, a sense of, man, I'm this small and look how big I can be if I'm there. Church, I'm concerned that we've lost our sense of awe at who Jesus is, and we've become so caught up in the day-to-day and trying to put on this front that we've lost faith and in turn humility that causes us to climb up the tree. Do you really want to see Jesus? Do you really want to see him? To climb up the tree. You must be willing to humble yourself and become undignified and possibly even humiliated for the sake of seeing and hearing Jesus. Do you want to draw near to him? Then climb up the tree. And as you do that, as you climb up the tree, do you know what Luke 19, 1 through 10 promises us? What the encouragement of this is? Is, man, as you climb up the tree, you know what happens? You hear Jesus' call. This is our second point. If you climb up the tree, second, hear Jesus' call. Now, as I was reading through this passage this week, for some reason, that first verse just kind of jumped out and stuck to me, right? He entered Jericho and was passing through. He entered Jericho and was passing through. Why did that verse hit me? Now, here's my question for you. Why was Jesus going through Jericho? You got to scroll up in your Bible, flip over the page, you know, look backwards. Luke 18, 31 through 33. Jesus takes his 12 disciples. He said to them, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and everything that is written about the Son of Man by the prophets will be accomplished. For he will be delivered over to the Gentiles and will be mocked and shamefully treated and spit upon. And after flogging him, they will kill him. And on the third day, he will rise." What was Jesus doing? Jesus was on a mission to Calvary. He was going to the cross for the redemption of all of creation, of all of time. Now, I don't know about you, but I would say that was a pretty important task. That was a pretty important thing to be chasing after, right? And I don't know about you, but I know that when I have a task at hand, I don't like to be distracted. I want to keep my head down and focus and get it done. Yet here we have Jesus, despite being 18 miles away from the culmination of his entire existence, the very reason why he came to earth, all of a sudden he decides, you know what? Let's make a little sachet through Jericho. For what purpose? At the end of chapter 18, to heal a blind beggar. In the beginning of chapter 19, to call Zacchaeus. You see, Jesus wasn't too busy for these people that their city despised and rejected. And church, if he's not too busy for them, he's not too busy for you. In fact, isn't that the whole purpose of his coming? Luke chapter 19, verse 10, "For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." Jesus came for those who had been overlooked or forgotten about. He came for those who were hated and belittled. He came for those who were lost and alone. Jesus took time to seek and save the lost. There's a story of these four hikers who decided that, you know what, we're going to go, we're going to stay at this cabin, and then we're going to hike up and summit this mountain in a day. We'll see it, and then we'll come back down. So they wake up early in the morning, and they make their way, and instead, the cabin said here, and the mountain was just directly above it. But instead of when they woke up in the morning just ascending straight upwards, they kind of went around over to the side of the ridge and began to work their way up there. They're making their way up, and they get a few hours into the hike, and one of the guys all of a sudden is realizing, man, we're kind of pushing it on time here, and I'm not really going to make it, and I'm actually holding these other three guys back. And you know what? For their sake, what I'll do is I'll tell them to go on, and I'll just hike on back down the mountain, go back to the cabin. They can get the rest of the experience. It's great for them. So he says, "Hey buddies, I'm going back. I'm worn out, and I'm keeping y'all back." So okay, good deal. We're going to go on up to the summit. So this guy, he turns around, and we turns around. Guess what? He looks down and he sees right below him. It's the cabin. He's like, "Ah, great. I'll just." Shoot straight down. Forget that. That took way too much time. I'm just going straight down. So he begins to make his way up and down the valley and over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house he goes. And as he's climbing down the mountain, all of a sudden he gets to the edge of a cliff and he goes, "Ah, shoot. Man, I think if I can go here and I can jump down to there and I can jump over to there, then I can be on the ground and keep my way going." So he makes his first jump and then kind of looks back up and is like, "Shoot, now I'm committed. I can't go back up that way because that was taller than I am. I can't reach it." So then he makes another jump and he gets there and he goes, "This next jump is way bigger than I thought it was going to be." And he looks up and he can't see the cabin anymore. And he looks back behind him and all he sees is the sheer edge of a cliff. So what does he do? I don't know what to do. I know what I can do. I'll take off my shirt and I'll take off my pants and I'll tie them together and I can use them as a rope to lower myself. So he does, and he drops it and he looks down and he goes, that ain't close enough. Not even close enough. So then what? So he tears his shirt in half and he tears his pants in half. Now he's just double the length of it. And he drops it down and he goes, I'm in trouble. So now he's standing on this rock with no clothes on. He can't go up and he can't go down because otherwise what happens? He dies. So what does he begin to do? He just begins to yell, help, 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 help. Somebody come save me. I'm stuck. You see, the man on the rock is you and me. We've decided we can make our way down home. We can make it, but in our best efforts, we fall way short. But the good news of Luke 19 is that Jesus is seeking to come and save those who are lost, those who are abandoned, those who are stranded on the rock. He is not too busy or too good for them. He has eyes who see and value those people who are lost and alone. And not only does he see and value them, what else does he do? Luke 19, 5. Zacchaeus. He comes to the sycamore tree that Zacchaeus has ascended, and he looks up and he says, Zacchaeus. Now, I don't know if Jesus would have known Zacchaeus. I don't think he would have. There's nothing textually, biblically that says that for some reason Jesus would have known who Zacchaeus was. I think that this is a situation that is similar to when Jesus called Nathanael to be his disciple. So if you go back to the beginning of the book of John, John's buddies come up and say, hey, John, we found the Messiah. And John goes, no way, it can't be him. And Nathanael says, there's no way, it can't be the Messiah. And Nathanael goes with him. And Jesus says to Nathanael, he says, here is a son of man that can be, or here's a man that can be trusted. And Nathanael goes, how do you know who I am? And Jesus goes, man, while you were sitting under the fig tree, I saw you. Jesus knew Nathanael by name before he ever met Jesus. Jesus knew Zacchaeus by name because he was Jesus. He was the God who through him all things were created, as we're going to see in Colossians when we go there after Easter. He is the one who holds all things together. So this is Jesus speaking Zacchaeus's name because he sees him alone and isolated. So for those of you today who feel isolated and alone, who feel ostracized and unknown, what you need to hear this morning is that Jesus knows your name. He knows your name and he knows everything about you, just like he knows everything about Zacchaeus and Nathanael. There is nothing about you that is hidden from him. And yet, just like Zacchaeus and Nathanael, this morning he is calling you by name and he is inviting himself over. Now, he says, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. Virtually all scholars say that this invitation and the language used here and in the rest of these verses indicates that what Jesus was doing was Jesus was inviting himself to Zacchaeus' house for table fellowship, for dinner. I'm coming up for dinner. And not just dinner, most likely he was saying, I'm going to spend the night with you. Now, here's why that is such a big deal. Because the evening meal in Jesus' culture was reserved for the family or for those who were closest to one another. It is not a small thing. I had a business meeting over lunch this week. If you walked into X10 and saw me eating with these guys, you probably thought nothing of it. You were just like, it's just another meeting. But that's not what Jesus going to eat with Zacchaeus is like. To go over to someone else's house and eat dinner with them was to identify with them. It was to say, I'm like you. I am with you. I'm a friend of you. This self-invitation was a personal identification with Zacchaeus. In other words, what Jesus was saying is, Zacchaeus, if you're despised and rejected, so am I. If you're hated and oppressed, so am I. If you're overlooked and unwanted, so am I. Jesus met with Zacchaeus on his level at his place. And in doing so, what Jesus was doing was he was inviting Zacchaeus into intimacy with him. I think it was Tim Keller who pointed out in his sermon on this, he said, it's really important that we take note of the order of grace here. Jesus doesn't walk up to this tree and say, hey, Zacchaeus, listen, man, I know you and I see you. And I tell you what, you need to get your life put together. It's time for you to change. And if you'll do that, then I'll come to you. He doesn't go, hey, Zacchaeus, I know your reputation for manipulation and for stealing. And if you'll go pay all of that back and you'll follow all the Old Testament rules and regulations to make yourself clean and pure, then we can be friends. That's not what Jesus does. Jesus says, hey, before you do anything, I'm coming over. Let me in. He's saying, you don't have to put yourself together because that's why I have come here. So come down from that tree right now. Come to me as you are, where you are. I see you, I love you, and I accept you. Not because you're in a tree, not because of what you've done, but because of who I am. I am the one who has come to seek and save the lost. I am the one who redeems and delivers those who are lost and hurting. So come down from that tree, for I must stay at your house today. Church, the call of Zacchaeus is the same call for us today. Jesus wants you to know that he's not too busy for you, that he sees you, he knows your name. There are not other missions that are too important for him. We just studied the book of Daniel, and we saw that God is sovereignly orchestrating history for his grand redemptive purposes. And even in the midst of that, he sees you. And he's saying, come down, come down. He is calling you to live intimately with him for eternity. So the question then is this: have you heard the call of Jesus? Have you heard it? Maybe you sense that call right now. Maybe the Spirit is working in your heart that you've gone, man, I've climbed up the tree, and Lord, I'm standing here looking for something because nothing else is satisfying me. And Jesus, I'm looking for you. And he's saying, hey, come on down. I'm here. And you're going, man, but this might mean that even here in front of all these people, I have to respond in some way. And you're wondering, what do I do? What is the next step? First, I climb up the tree. Then I hear Jesus' call. But finally, what's the third thing that Luke 19, 1 through 10 shows us? It's this: take Jesus home. Take Jesus home. Jesus says, Zacchaeus, hurry, come down, for I must stay at your house today. And then verses 6 through 9, if we put those on the screen, I'm not going to reread all of them. We're going to kind of work through them here at the end. As Jesus says this, It stirs up two responses. There's two responses that happen here from Jesus, right? So here's the first one. Zacchaeus, so he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. Here's the first response to Jesus' invitation. It's joy. It's obedience and joy. We're going to look at that second. What's the other thing? And when the crowd saw it, they grumbled. So there's joy and grumbling. These are the two positive and negative responses to Jesus. Now let's look at the negative first. The crowd is perturbed. They're angry. Really, you know what it is? They're jealous. They're jealous. They're going, Jesus, man, I have sat through your extremely long sermons. Would you hurry up and finish? Right? They have followed him along the path, and we got hungry, and we were out there till night, but you know, he did feed us, right? He did come up with food. That's really cool. And now here we are. We're walking our way up to Jerusalem because what do we see in Daniel 8? The Son of Man is going to come riding in on the clouds to make all things right. And what does Luke call Jesus here? What is the name used for him at verse 10? Behold, the Son of Man came to seek. So what are they expecting? Here comes this guy who's going to redeem and restore all things. We have been walking with you. I have been doing your work. I've been listening to your sermons. And now what are you going to do, Jesus? Man, you're going to go to that guy's house? Man, he betrayed us. He stole from us. He manipulated us. What about us? So what do the crowds do? They grumble. Just like their forefathers before them, the crowd grumbles. Dustin opened us up this morning with Exodus chapter 15, right? And this Exodus 15, what happens is God delivers the people of Israel out of slavery from Egypt, and he parts the Red Sea, and they've plundered the Egyptians, and life is going well, and they get through at the end of it, and then you get to Exodus 15 where they sing the song and everybody's happy, but then 7 days into their journey, it's hot, it's dry, it's dusty, and they're hungry, and they go, God, how could you? Moses, what a terrible leader you are. You see, Israel, having experienced the miraculous provision of God and the deliverance of God, now grumbles because they're hungry. They have been inconvenienced and they feel neglected. And here we are, thousands of years later, and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. The people continue to do the same thing. They are discontent. They are jealous. And I think that they feel unseen because Jesus doesn't give them what they want based off of their own self-righteous actions. Jesus, we were trying to protect you from this guy, and now you're going to him? I wonder if we are more like the crowd than we are Zacchaeus. I wonder if in our self-righteousness and jealousy, we look at other people and go, it's not fair that God would bless them and not me with all the things I've done. I've walked faithfully with you. I've served the church. I've done all the things, yet God, you're withholding this from me. Maybe I feel like, God, you're withholding yourself from me. And in doing so, what do? We grumble. But maybe our grumbling isn't out of envy of others, but out of what the call of Jesus is. right? Maybe it's to go, Jesus, I got up in the tree. What more do you want from me? I made it up here. I was willing to be humiliated in front of everyone. I don't want to get back down. I've gotten comfortable here. I don't need to take any more steps of obedience or faith. Jesus, it's inconvenient for me to follow you in obedience because things have just gotten too busy all of a sudden. You know what? I'll get out of the tree when things slow down. I'll get out of the tree after I get back from vacation. Has your disposition towards the call of Jesus been grumbling? Maybe that's the call of salvation. Maybe it's the call towards service, serving the church. Maybe it's towards the call of discipleship and accountability. Yet you hear those things and you go, man, I just don't have time. I'm too busy. God, how could you? So out of their envy and out of their frustration, out of their self-righteousness, what does the crowd do? They grumble. But then there's Zacchaeus. How does Zacchaeus respond to the call of Jesus? What do we see in that first verse? So he hurried and came down. He hurried and came down and received him joyfully. Jesus has spoken to me. Me of all people. Here, he walked up to this tree and he spoke to me. How could such a wonderful thing happen? You see, one response to hearing the call of Jesus is grumbling. The second is immediate obedience with joy. Zacchaeus shimmies down the tree with great joy and he says, come on, man, you're going to my house today. Now, what would stir up this sort of response out of Zacchaeus? Why would immediate obedience and joy be what Zacchaeus does when Jesus walks up and says, get down, I'm coming to your house today? I think at the heart of it, Zacchaeus knew who he was. He had to climb up that tree to see Jesus. He realized it wasn't just his short stature that prevented him from God, it was everything else he had done. He was the man stranded on the rock, naked and afraid. Everything he had done in life left him wanting for more, but now the king of the universe has come to him, and he didn't just wave when he walked by. He walked up to him, and he called him by name, and he invited himself over. There is joy because Jesus now sees me, he knows me, and he calls me by name. Amazing love. How can it be? You see, receiving this call led Zacchaeus to do four things. The first one we've kind of looked at, he gets down out of the tree. He doesn't just get down, he hurries down. There is immediate obedience to Jesus. I remember I was listening to a sermon from a pastor friend of mine in North Carolina. I think it was back when we lived in North Carolina. And he was preaching on parenting. And he made the statement that's stuck with me forever. He said, delayed obedience is disobedience. So when I tell my kids, hey, put the iPad up and go clean your room, like, is the expectation that you do this after you watch another show or play another game? Parents, no. Right? We tell our kids to do something. The expectation is you go do this now. And if you don't do this now, you're disobeying me. Now, that call can come from a firm hand, right? It can come from a firm hand of discipline as I do as a parent. But the call of Zacchaeus isn't a firm hand, it's a loving hand. It's a call to forsake position and place and perception of others to follow him. To delay in that call is to disobey that call. It's to say to Jesus, hey, Jesus, I hear you, but I've just got more important things to do right now. Immediate obedience is the first response that comes out of joy of hearing Jesus's call. Second, this leads to right confession. What does Zacchaeus say to Jesus right off the bat? Behold, Lord, behold. Scholars read one thing this week, said it's like saying, look, Dad. Look at what I've done. Look at this. What he is ultimately doing is he is surrendering authority. He is saying, Jesus, I've been the Lord of my life. I have sought to satisfy my own heart's desires with all sorts of other things, but you know where that's taken me and where that's left me? It's left me up in a tree. Now I'm taking the crown off of my head and I'm placing it on yours. I am bowing my will to your will. I'm going to allow your call to satisfy my heart. And that might sound scary or really hard, but the truth is I can do that because it's you that's called me, because it's Jesus. And so when he says, behold, Lord, he is taking that and he's not saying, hey, God, you know what? I'm gonna give you part of me, but I'm gonna keep this other part. What he's saying is, God, I'm taking you into my house and you can have access to all of it. It's all yours. It all belongs to you. There's none of me that I'm keeping for myself. All of it belongs to you. Nothing is hidden from you. Nothing is kept from you. There's joy in getting down. There's joy in confession. There's joy in obedience. And then there's third, joy in generosity. That phrase, behold, Lord, he says, is a statement of surrender. not by just letting Jesus in, but then by letting Jesus direct where it takes you. Where does it take him? I give half of my good to the poor. And what scholars say is this is a tithe, right? This is a tithe. Now, if you are familiar or were raised in the church, you know that the word tithe means 10%. And in the Old Testament, God told the people of Israel, I want you to take your 10% of the first fruits that you have, and I want you to give it to the priest. And they would use that for their own ability to live, but then they would take the rest of that and give it to the poor. So the biblical call then in the Old Testament, and what Jesus's hearers would have all understood is, hey, 10% of our first fruits we give to God. Yet, here we go. What does Zacchaeus do? Half of it. God, I want you to take half of it. Now, I get questions on this from time to time. Are we supposed to give 10% to the church? I'm going to make a little sachet here into this. Are we supposed to give 10% of what we make to the church? And honestly, church, I think what Zacchaeus gives us here is a picture of faithful giving. You see, what would enable Zacchaeus to say half of what I have belongs to the poor? What would enable that? Well, what he is doing is he is going, man, I recognize that Jesus laid his reputation on the line by coming and speaking to me. So I'm willing to give half of it to the poor. I can do that. So faithful giving then, faithful giving isn't 10%. It's to look at the extravagant generosity of a God who comes and speaks to people who have rejected and manipulated and sinned against him and says, I'm coming for you. And it's to look at him and go, man, that's all I need. So God, 10%, I'm not giving you 10%. Here, take it. It's yours. It all belongs to you. So then is tithing mean we're supposed to give 10%? No, it doesn't. For some of you, it might mean that. What a tithe is, when we pass that plate in the morning, what is that to do? It's to go, God, I trust you with one of the things that I hold nearest and dearest to my heart, and that's my money. The church doesn't need your money. God owns the church, and he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He owns everything. If he wants to keep this movement going, he will keep this movement going. So when we give, our giving is not supposed to be, man, let me check the box in my 10%. It's a, man, God, I see you, and I see what you've done for me, and all of it belongs to you. So what does Zacchaeus do when he hears that? Man, he gives half of his goods. He gives half of his goods. I have a pastor friend that lives in North Carolina, and he made a commitment early in their marriage that the largest expense in their budget at the end of the year would be the church. Not their mortgage, not their food, not their car payments, not their retirement, not vacations, the church. And the reason they did that is they believe that the mission of God was the most important thing that there is, and they wanted every aspect of their life to proclaim it. I know of an older couple that was nearing retirement, and they had been working so hard to pinch their pennies. And as they came to know the Lord, they heard the Lord call them and say, man, that retirement money is not for you to veg on and enjoy life. So what they did was they took their entire retirement fund and they gave it to a mission organization, and then they joined the mission organization and became missionaries. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? Because they wanted to be a part of seeking and saving the lost, and they knew that God wasn't done with that mission. The call of Jesus leads to extravagant generosity. 10% is not a rule, it's a starting point. Our giving should reflect our faith in Jesus, and for some of you, that means you are not giving near enough. For others, you're walking by faith because you say, I don't need this money, it belongs to him anyways. What Zacchaeus shows us is that giving is a matter of lordship and not a matter of percentage. So 50% he gives to the poor, half of it. And then fourfold he gives to those that he's defrauded. Now in the Old Testament, what God commands his people is if you've stolen from somebody, you have to give it back to them plus 20%. What you've taken plus 20%, okay? But Zacchaeus says what? I'll pay 400% back of what I took. 50% to the poor and 450% to the poor and 400% to those he stole from. This had to be financially devastating for Zacchaeus. Had to be. What Zacchaeus wasn't saying was just come to my house and eat dinner. He wasn't saying, let me get my stuff put together and make a room for you. No, what Zacchaeus was saying was, even the stuff I treasure the most, even the things I've sought to fulfill my life with, I give to you. You see what's happening? You see what happens here? Jesus's acceptance of Zacchaeus sets Zacchaeus free from everything else he had looked to for satisfaction, and it created a radical transformation that took greed, and it didn't just turn it into generosity, but it turned it into justice. You see, Zacchaeus cared not just about making things right, but making them new, because that's what Jesus does.
was having a conversation with a friend of mine this week. This kids had stolen something, and they found out. Mom and dad did. And so what did mom and dad do? They called the person that the kid stole from and said, hey, I need my kids to come talk to you. So they did. They told what they had happened. And then the parents looked at the person and said, what do you want my kids to do to make this right, besides giving you back what they took? And the parents, offended person said, hey, I want them to go and buy a toy for someone else and give it to them. You know, 20%, right? Great, great thing to do. Great way to try and teach your kids a lesson. And we were having this conversation, and I asked my buddy in the middle of it, we were talking about how, I did that stuff when I was a kid, right? I stole some things I shouldn't have done, and he did some of the same things. I said, but, you know, as we're sitting here talking about this, bud, I said, you know, how do we do that today? How do we steal from others things that don't belong to us? I love the statement I read by George Whitefield this week. It said, if ever God gives you true faith, you will never rest till, like Zacchaeus, you have made restitution to the utmost of your power. Is there somewhere or someone that you need to get out of the tree and go make restitution with today? You see, if God has given you true faith, you will not rest till it is done. You will not rest until you have done all things, not just to make it right, but to make it new. That's what God does. He steps up to the tree, he calls you down, and he makes you new. That's what he did for Zacchaeus. And these four things point towards the true nature of who Zacchaeus had become. Verse 9, and Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. You see, salvation didn't come to Zacchaeus because he did the right thing or because he said the right stuff. And it didn't come to him because he was an Israelite by heritage. No. Immediate obedience, right confession, extravagant generosity, radical reconciliation and restitution had all come because Jesus called him out and saved him. The identity that Zacchaeus had worked so hard to earn was just freely given to him. It wasn't based off of who he was, but of what Jesus had done. Now, the story of Zacchaeus is significant. Not just because of what happened to Zacchaeus, right? This is a cool story to me that has some really helpful points. Climb up a tree, hear Jesus' call, take Jesus home. All that is helpful for me to remember and see and know what I'm supposed to hear and do. But there's more that comes out of Luke 19, 1 through 10. Do you know what this chapter is on the heels of? Trick question. It's Luke chapter 18. Luke 18, 25 through, actually, if you back up to Luke 18, 18, Jesus tells a story, or Luke has this story of the rich young ruler. And the rich young ruler walks up to Jesus and says, hey, Jesus, what must I do to enter the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus looks at him and says, keep the commandments. And the rich young ruler goes, man, I've done it. I've been a good person all the days of my life. And so Jesus says, okay, I want you to take all that you have and I want you to sell it and give it to the poor and then come and follow me. And the rich young ruler bows his head in sadness and walks off because he just can't do it. So Jesus in verse 25 through 27 says this, for it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. What was Zacchaeus? He was a rich person. He was really wealthy. What is Luke telling us with these 10 verses right here at this point, in this place, this time? He is saying, what is impossible with man is possible with God. Jesus has just shown us that he is God, and he is showing that it is possible for a camel to go through the eye of the needle. You may be sitting here this morning going, I can't crawl up that tree. I know what you're saying, and I hear what you're asking of me, but I just can't do it. Man, the good news for you is with Jesus, it's possible. You may be going, man, I hear the call of Jesus and I know what it demands of me. I just can't do it. The good news is with Jesus, it's possible. You go, man, I want to take Jesus home. I want to follow him in obedience, but I just fall short every time. I just can't do it. But the good news of Zacchaeus is with Jesus, it's possible. So, church, I ask you this morning. Will you crawl up a tree? Will you hear his call? Will you take him home? Will you give him access to every nook and cranny in your life and say, behold, Lord, it is all yours. Have it all. Have it all because you gave your all for me. You see, the story of Zacchaeus crawling up in a tree points us to the story that we're going to look at here in a few weeks, and that's of Jesus crawling up in a tree, not to call Zacchaeus home, but to call all of us home and say, you are mine. I want to live in intimacy with you now, but in order for that to happen, I have to have all of you. Are you willing to give all of you for all of him because he gave it all for you? He wasn't too busy for you. He didn't have too much going on. He sees you alone and stranded, and he came to seek and save you. Climb a tree, hear his call, take him home. What we're going to do now is we're going to transition into a moment of observing the Lord's Supper. And what this meal does for us is it points us towards the one who did climb up a tree for us. Right? The one who did die for us, who was crushed on our behalf, who was rejected and despised. So that way, when God looks at us, he doesn't go, man, you stink, I've had enough. But he goes, nah, come here. I want to make my home with you. I want to dwell among you. I want to be your people. I want you to be my people. I want to be your father and you, my son. I identify with you. That's what we are about to observe. And that's what this points towards. So if you don't know Jesus, if Christ is not Lord of your life, if you haven't heard the call and stepped out in obedience and faith, then this is not for you. This is for those who say, man, when I take this and I bite this cracker, I am recognizing that it is my sin that crushed him. And I am taking that for myself. That's who this is for. If that's not you, then when this plate comes by, just pass it on to the next person. You don't have to have it. You don't have to observe it. This is for the church. But actually, if your role now is to pass the plate, then the call that I have for you today is to respond in obedience and faith. It's to look at him and say, Jesus, my best efforts have left me stranded on a rock. Sit right where you're at and just say, God, save me, and he will. That's all it takes. If you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that Christ is Lord and that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. That's what he came to do. To seek and save the lost. So here's what I want to do. I want to invite the deacons to come on up, music team, come on up. And as they get in place, church, what I want to give you an opportunity to do is to sit with the Lord for just a second and go, God, where am I not being obedient? Where is it that I need to respond to what I have heard and what you have called me to?